Good morning. Today's daf and yavamos kuf vav. We are in kuf hamad beis. We are just right in the middle of the amud. We're in the middle of the story. Let's back up just for a moment before we continue with the story. Here in the 12th parak of the Masechta, we're talking about the mitzvah of chalitza, the very basics, the practicals of how to do chalitza. Yavam and yavama elect not to do yibam, but rather to do chalitza in order to sever the relationship. So under those circumstances, so you go through the procedure of chalitza. And that creates a severance that we already established in the beginning of the Masechta, but it wasn't until this perek, the 12th perek of the Masechta, that we actually go through the how-to. Like, how do you do chalitza? So that is the basic discussion / halachas that are brought down in this perek. And the one particular halacha now that we are sitting on is the question of age. In other words, for a man to be involved in the chalitza, so he has to be an adult. Okay, if the surviving brother is not an adult, he's a minor, so chalitza is simply not an option. Now, what about yibum? So that goes back to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, vis-a-vis the bia of a 9-year-old, the bia of a 10-year-old, but that's not our topic. Our topic right now is chalitza, so we know that a chalitza can only be done by an adult. That's a given, that we know already. What about her? Does she have to be an adult? So that is not clear. In the Torah tells us that he has to be an ish. He has to be a man, he has to be an adult, but the Torah does not tell us regarding her status and whether or not she has to be an adult or she does not have to be an adult. And it's a machlokis ha-tanayim. So we saw yesterday the sheet of Rameir says that she has to be an adult as well. And that means to say that if, let's say, she got married as a minor, which is certainly possible, so they want to do chalitza, according to Rameir, they're going to have to wait until she becomes an adult. And then and only then can you do chalitza. Okay, but meanwhile, however, with the Chachamim argue in Rameir, and the Chachamim said that she does not need to be an adult. Okay, this, the position of the Chachamim, is what we are discussing right now. So in a moment we're going to point out, or we did point out already, that the Chachamim is none other than the Shita Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that she doesn't have to be an adult, she can be a minor. In along those lines, that's basically the good amount of information that we need to know, in order to go over, basically pick up where we left off yesterday. The Gemara Adahachi Asa. So we are on Kuf Hamad Beis, and we're about a third of the way down. So first words in the line. Now you'll recall that we were in Shir with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, right? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was saying Shir, and the first question that was asked was regarding where you should have your eyes while saying Shemone Esrei. Should the eyes be looking down? Should the eyes be looking up? Obviously having nothing to do with our discussion. But regardless, the point being is that the basic questions regarding the Amida. Now we're up to the next question. Now, Dehachi Asa Rabbi Lemisifta. Okay, now Rabbi comes in. Meaning this is Rabbi Shir, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and he's now walking into Shir. So, Lemisifta, Inu Dehava Kalila Yasiva Beduchthaihu. So those people who were light-footed, so they got to their place real quickly. And Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Agav Yukre, have the Masiv Azel. Now, as far as Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi is concerned, so he was a little bit not light-footed. Okay, I could say it nicely. So so it took him a while to get to a seat. So while he's getting to a seat, so people are being walked, quote unquote, walked over. And Amr Le Avdan. So Avdan says, now who's Avdan? So we'll see in just a moment. He was basically the Shamash. He served Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and so he was the attendant. And Mi Uzesh Maseh Al Rosh Am Kadosh. So he was really upset, meaning somebody stepping over everybody. Now it's not just somebody; it's Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. But he feels that Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi does not have the right. He's not in that kind of position of kavod where he could just be walking over people. So Amalei Ana Yishmael Rabbi Yossi Shabbat Lomot Torah Mi Rabbi. So he apologizes. Okay, so granted, I'm narrating a little bit. So he apologizes and he says, "I'm Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, and I came to learn by Rabbi Shir." By virtue of the fact that he's introducing himself, certainly gives us the implication that he's not a regular by the Shir. Regardless. Okay, so fine. So he introduces himself. So Avdan at this point in time now becomes really critical and really unwelcoming. You know what I'm going to say? I say this all the time. we don't have all the information over here. Meaning the Gemara certainly selects exactly what information it's going to provide for us, but we don't have all the information, we don't have all the background. Meaning because some of these comments that are going to be made in both directions are going to be extraordinarily sharp comments. And so what's happening over here, what's the background? I'm sure there's background to the story, but we are just not, we're not afforded that that privilege of knowing all the details. Anyway, so Avdan says now to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, you really think you're worthy to learn Torah by Rabbi? So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi in his defense says, look, Moshe is learning from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think Moshe was really worthy to learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Amalei v'chi Moshe ata. So Avdan says to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, well, you think you're Moshe? So Amalei v'chi Rabcha Elokim Hu. Well, what do you think? Do you think that Rabbi's really God? So, like I said, a lot of really sharp comments from in both directions. So, right, the dialogue got. I don't want to say this because I don't know. In other words, I'm going to sound like I'm going to judge if I say this, but the dialogue got out of hand. Okay, again, it's easier to say that when you know everything. I don't know all the details, but anyway, but certainly there were a lot of jabs in this dialogue over here. So I'm Rav Yosef Shakli Rebbe Mitrafse Dekamale Rab Chavala Rebbe. So Rav Yosef makes just a quick comment over here, and that is Rebbe has a certain amount of responsibility in the story, in that he was quiet the whole time. Meaning, obviously, Rebbe walked in, and Rebbe didn't say a word. And this exchange between Rebbe Shmuel Rav Yosef and Avdan, where there were real jabs being thrown in both directions. And Rebbe was quiet, so Rev Yosef's comment, Rev Yosef obviously is at a much later point in time, so his comment right now is that Rebbe also took it a little bit on the chin because he didn't say anything. How did he take it on the chin? Because if you listen carefully to what Rebbe Shmuel Rav Yosef said, he said, Rabcha, your Rebbe, meaning he didn't even include himself as one of the Talmidim, even though the whole reason why he came in is so that he could learn Torah. Anyway, Adahachi Asi Yavam Lakami the Rebbe. So in comes the Yavama in front of Rebbe. Okay, and this is the reason why we're here. Meaning all that was intro, so to say. But right now, Gemara is going to be focusing on the following event. And Amar Le Rebbe La'avdan, Poke Badka. And so Rebbe now instructs Avdan, look, we're about to do Chalitza, and she seems young. And is she an adult? We need to know that. So do Badika. Okay, and what I will suggest, although I do not know, is that the Bedika, he deputized some woman to do the Bedika, meaning he didn't do the Bedika himself. But anyway, he needed to ensure that she was an adult, because Rebbe right now was subscribing to the viewpoint that in order for Chalitza to be done, he has to be an adult and she has to be an adult. So Labasa did not fuck. So now they went out. Avdan and this potential Yavama. Amalei Rebbe Shmuel, kach amar Abba, ish kasa beparsha, v'isha ben gedola ben ketana. So Rebbe Shmuel says, okay, let me quote my father. And he quotes his father, and his father said that for the mitzvah of chalitza, he has to be an adult, but she doesn't have to be an adult, she could be ketana. And still, chalitza could be done. So Amalei ta lo tzricha kvar horazakin. So now, Rebbe's calling back Avdan. And I mentioned this yesterday at the beginning of the story, but now I'll say it again. The amount of respect that everybody had for Rav Yossi was off the chart. Meaning when Rav Yossi had a psak, so everybody just stopped and, oh, okay, fine, Rav Yossi said X. Okay, let's go forward. And so you see it clearly over here in this story. Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi quotes his father, Rav Yossi, regarding a psak of Chalitza. And at that point in time, Rabbi said, okay, well, let's just proceed meaning despite the fact that there's a machlokas on the issue, Rabbi was more than prepared to proceed, like the Shita of Rebbe Yossi. Okay? Kvar horizakin. Meaning if you did a search, if you typed in a search in the Gemara, how many times the Gemara says Kvar horizakin, I don't know what the number is, but it's going to be, it'll be more than a handful of times. Where you see that Rebbe's comment was, oh, the elder Paskin? Okay, good. Let's move on. Meaning we're following it. So anyway, so now, Avdan is walking back to his seat. Okay, so now you appreciate the irony over here. As Avdan was critical of Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi, as Rabbi Shmuel Rav Yossi was taking his time to get to his seat, walking over the students, now Avdan is walking back to his seat, And so now, Kamav say, I'm done. So he's walking back to his seat. Va'asi am, or le Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yosi, Misha tzarech lo, am kadosh, yifsal rosho, am kadosh. Misha ain't tzarech lo, am kadosh, hech yifsal rosho, am kadosh. And so now Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yosi is critical of Avdan. You know who can walk over people, right, to get to their seat? So only somebody who's needed. But somebody who's not needed does not have the right to walk over people. So in other words, as far as I was concerned, I was needed. I quoted psak of my father. Meanwhile, I'm going to say it strongly. What use do you have over here that you have the right to walk over people? It's okay. So Amale Rebbe Lavdan kum beduchtech. So and Rebbe says to Avdan, nu, you have to stand in your spot. Meaning Rebbe over here is going to be totally supportive of this comment of Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi. And he turns to Avdan and he says, you have to stay there. Meaning you do not have the right to walk over people. Okay. The story is over. We're given an unfortunate epilogue. Okay, Tana. But also Shanitzara Avdan. So because of this moment, so Avdan got Saras, and Vitavushe Banav, and two of his sons drowned. And two of his daughter-in-laws received Miyun. Okay. Not received Miyun, but they did Miyun. Okay. That's it. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Brich Rechmana de Kasvila Avdan Bahama. And so Rav Nachman Yitzchak also has commentary on the story. And Baruch Hashem that Avdan received all of his embarrassment in this world, meaning that any onish that is coming his way was taken up in this world and so that he can only get schar in olam haba. Okay, what exactly was the crime of Avdan that he was so severely punished? So, in other words, obviously the exchange that he had with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi was a really unfortunate exchange. As we went through the story together, you know, on both sides, both of them were caustic to one another. Okay, and a question, right? Question of who started it. Yeah. Okay. All right. It's a tough story. What comes out from the whole story, okay, I'm not going to, you know, we'll just walk away from the episode. I mean, there's a lot to walk away from the episode, but we're just going to focus on the halacha as it relates to us. Meaning our focus has been whether or not a woman has to be an adult for chalitza. Rav Yossi says a woman does not have to be an adult. She could be a katana. And we saw in a story where Rebbe accepted that psak. Amr Rebbe, Amr Midvarv Shal Rebbe, Noma Katana Cholatzis Bepuutos. Ah, okay, fine. So she is a katana. That's a given. Well, it's a given. It's a machlokas. But we're going to possibly like Rav Yossi that she could be a katana. How much of a katana are we talking about? Does she have to have any kind of mental capacity whatsoever in order to be involved in chalitza? And the Gemara brings down opinions amongst the Amoraim. So first, the opinion of Rabbi Ami, and that is, Midvarv Shal Rebbe, no more katana cholatzis bepu'utos. She is the age of pu'utos. What are the age of pu'utos? That is when a minor is afforded the ability, midrabanan, to be involved in transaction. Okay, so let's say a minor is involved in a transaction, right? 9 years of age, 8 years of age, so is the transaction going to be acceptable? Minatora, no, but midrabanan, yes. So this is what's called the age of pu'utos. And Rabbi Ami says that despite the fact that we're saying that a minor is acceptable, but they have to be this, at least this age. It's not exactly clear what the age actually is, but basically when they understand what a transaction means. And Rava Amar Shetagi Alonas Adarim. And Rava's of the position that, no, she has to be even older. Meaning Onas Devarim, the age of where Neder is going to be Chal. Where's the age of a Neder is going to be Chal? It's 1 year before the Bas Mitzvah. So in other words, they have to be at least 11 years of age. The Gemara says, by the way, after all said and done, there's a really funny ending to the whole discussion. After all said and done, she has to have Shei Saras, meaning she has to be Gedola. She has to be an adult, right? She can't be a minor. So I know that ending is very funny, meaning we just spent an entire Amud of Gemara, all the way from the top of the Amud, right here, saying that the halacha is like Rav Yossi, Rebbe stopped everything to passing like Rav Yossi. And then the Gemara's conclusion at the end of the day was, oh, by the way, the halacha is like Reb Meir, that she has to be an adult. I don't know how that happened. I don't know why the Gemara did that, but that's exactly what just happened. Chalta b'shnayim. Amar Rav Yosef bar Minyumi, Amar Rav Nachman, and Alach HaKosa Azog. Okay. You need a Beis Din. So there were opinions in the Mishnah that says you don't need a Beis Din, but the Gemara says, okay, I know there are opinions like that, but that's not the halacha. You need a Beis Din. So the Gemara says, great. Amar Rav Nachman Chalazimna. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's redundant. Meaning, this is a point that we already went over previously. And now, what are we doing over here? We're repeating what we already saw. So, Tzricha, the Gemara says, yeah, I know that, but it's necessary. If I said it only the first time, in the first round, I would have said, okay, ideally, you should have a Beis Din, but b'di'evit, it's okay if you don't have a Beis Din. So when we say the in halachikos ozog, so we are reinforcing the idea that you absolutely need a Beis Din. It's critical. It's not an ideal. It's b'di'evit. The iashmin and halachikos ozog. Now, if we only had the second comment, the halacha does not fall like these pair of tanaim in our Mishnah. So ela kitana kama hava min b'di'evit hava lechatchil libay chamisha tzricha. I would have thought that that's b'di'evit, but l'chatchila, one requires five. Meaning, we go back to a point that we made earlier in this perek of whether I need three or whether I need five. Now, you remember, how many do you need? Do you need three or five? So it's a funny answer. You need three, even though you need five. Now, but you remember, in other words, we said you need three, you need five, because the fourth and the fifth dayan are not there as dayanim, they're there for pirsum hadavar. Right, just to publicize the matter. But really, fundamentally, you need three. I might have thought that from a basin standpoint, I need five. That's the Havamina. That's what I would have thought. So, Kamash Malan, even from a basin standpoint, you only need three. You don't need five. Okay. Maisa Shechatzu. Okay. Then our Mishnah went on to record the following. And that is, a chalitza was done privately, a private chalitza. So, private chalitza, it sounds like from the way the Mishnah is reporting the story, that mamish, nobody was there for the chalitza. And to which the Gemara says, nobody was there for the chalitza. What do you mean? Maisa shechaltzu. Veinola veina miyadana. So, I don't understand. There was literally nobody there. If nobody was there, so how do we, meaning there weren't even edim that were there. How do we know that the chalitza even occurred? Okay. So, Amar Avinu Amashmol ve'edim ra'om noso mibachutz. Okay, so, the Gemara says, when we say nobody was there, it means nobody was inside the jail together with them, but there were two witnesses who were outside who were witnessing it. Okay. So what comes out now is the following. In order for a chalitza to be done, there needs to be a basin, and there needs to be witnesses as well. Okay, the Ritva right here on our Gemara has a lengthy discussion in terms of the witnesses' purpose regarding chalitza. Okay. Just a quick background over here. This is just very basic and important information. When we say that witnesses are required, so sometimes witnesses are required in order to just simply verify that it happened. In other words, then verification is necessary when, let's say, things get challenged at a later point in time. Okay, I lend you money. Okay, and then at a later point in time, you deny having been lent money. Okay, so witnesses, if they were there at the time of the loan, So witnesses now can come to court and testify that they saw the actual loan transpire. Okay, good. So sometimes the purpose of witnesses is just simply to verify what happened, right? If there's a crime, so the witness's job over there is to verify what happened, so that basically knows exactly what happened. But sometimes the purpose of witnesses is what's called kiyum hadavar, not to verify what happened, but rather to validate and to substantiate. So, for example, a couple get married. So, a couple get married and there are witnesses at the wedding. So, why are the witnesses at the wedding? All right, just at a later point in time, if anyone challenges whether or not they get married, the witnesses are going to test, no, we were there, they got married. No, the purposes of witness at a wedding is for kiyum hadavar, meaning the marriage simply doesn't take place until the witnesses see it, meaning they are there to be mikayim. They're validating the marriage. It's not for purpose of verification, it's purpose of validation. Okay. So, the Ritva over here wonders, when we're talking about chalitza, so we just established that there are witnesses. Witnesses are necessary. So, are the witnesses there to just simply verify for a later point in time? Or are they serving the same purpose as like witnesses at a wedding? Are they there to validate? Kiyam HaDavar. The Ritva himself is unsure, and he goes over both proposals. Anyway, obviously very critical in terms of understanding what the role of witnesses are by a chalitza. So, Ibailahu, we are three lines from the bottom of Kuf Hamad Beis. Question the Gemara wants to know, Maisa Shechaltu, Beino Leveina Avrai, Uba Maisa Lefnei Rabbi Kiva Beis Asurin. Okay, some details of the story that need to be clarified. Notably, were did the chalitza take place totally outside of jail? And the only reason why we're in jail is because Rabbi Kiva's there in jail. And we were asking a shout out to Rabbi Kiva, who happened to have been in jail. That's one way to understand it. Odilma, Maestro Shechaltz, Bein Olaveina, Bevesa Asurim. Or maybe no, maybe the couple were in jail. Okay, now, why is this detail so important? Why does the Gemara need to seek clarification on this particular detail? I don't know. So, I'm Rav Yehuda Amarav, Bevesa Asurim, Aya Maestro, Levesa Asurim, Ba Maestro. So, Rav Yehuda Amarav says that both. Meaning, the episode happened in jail, meaning, for whatever reason, he and she were both in jail at the time, incarcerated, meaning so... chalitza was done certainly with no beis din, but as we just learned together, there were a pair of eidim. Admittedly, they were outside the jail, but okay, there were a pair of eidim. And when the question was forwarded to Rabbi Kiva, it happens to be Rabbi Kiva was also in jail. Okay, and again, I'm not sure why all these details are really important for the purpose of the story, or the Gemara just simply wants to get the story right, which. In of itself is a value, but okay. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, Kuvav. We are on the very top of today's daf, and just some basic discussions regarding chalitza. Okay, so Tana Rabbanan, chalitza mutas kshera. So if the chalitza is a mistaken chalitza, so kshera. So ezu chalitza mutas. Okay, good. So if it's a mistaken chalitza, so it's going to be an acceptable chalitza. So here we need a basic definition. What does that mean? Okay, so let's say the following. Okay, so the guy's a Yavam, obviously. He's a Yavam, she's a Yavama. And right now he's just being a little bit difficult, meaning right now we think the Chalitza is their best option. And we go over to him and he say, would you do Chalitza? And he's like, nope, not interested in doing Chalitza. Okay, all right, we obviously have an issue on our hands. We then say to him, look, I'll tell you what, do chalitza with her, because you know what's going to happen when you do chalitza, you and her are going to be married. Okay? So just do chalitza, and everything will work out perfectly. Okay. So, he doesn't know, he does chalitza, okay, good, you're shekolach. Okay, good. Now you and her, hold the thought, it's an excellent thought. So you and her now are severed, and good. And according to Reish Lakish, that's what the Braisa means when the Braisa says that a chalitza mutas is kshera. It's talking about that very issue. Okay, Ben, just hold your question for just a moment. The Gemara is going to ask your question. So, Amar le Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, it can't possibly be. It can't be. Ani shona ben shin is kavin hu velan is kavin hi ben shin is kavin hi velan is kavin hu chalitza so psula achi is kavin shem keachad va'atamar chalitza so kshera. You remember, just a couple of days ago in the Daf, we talked about how Kavanah is necessary. And Kavanah on both parties. He needs to have Kavanah, she needs to have Kavanah. And now, if there is a requirement of Kavanah, you are entertaining the idea that the man is doing Chalitza with the thinking, because we gave him the thinking, with the thinking that with this Chalitza we're going to get married, and you think that that Chalitza is going to be good, even b'di'evin. Of course that's not good. Meaning, there's no Kavanah over there. So, Ella, so... Rav Yochanan absolutely rejects the idea of Reish Lakish, that's what the Braisa was talking about. Okay, so if you're rejecting Reish Lakish, you obviously have to offer your own shot in what the Braisa is talking about. So Ella, Kol She'omrim Lo Chalotz La, Al Menashe Titen Lach Masayim Zuz. Says Rav Yochanan, the Pshat and the Braisa goes like this. Do you know what a Chalitza Mutas is, the example of a Chalitza Mutas? It's where we go over to the Yavam and we say to him, look, right, I know right now you're not super interested in doing chalitza. Let's sweeten the deal. How about you do chalitza, and we'll make sure that she gives you a lot of money. All right, 200 zuz. or whatever the number is, an exorbitant amount of money. So would you be doing the chalitza then? He's like, okay, for 200 zuz? Okay, good. Now I'll do it. So then he does the chalitza for 200 zuz. So at that point in time, now what you can say is, okay, mazel tov, okay, the chalitza is done. I, the 200 zuz. Okay, right now what we're going to say is, we're not just right now, but in other words, she doesn't have to pay it. She doesn't have to pay the 200 zuz. And I, but didn't we promise that she was going to pay the 200 zuz? Yeah, that's called the Tanai. And over here, as far as the Tanai is concerned, the Tanai is not going to be binding. It won't be a binding condition attached to the chalitza. The chalitza will work even if the condition is not satisfied. Okay, now, an important question, and that is, why not? Why will the chalitza work if I'm attaching a condition to the chalitza and the condition is not met, and now we're saying that the chalitza is going to work anyway? How can that be? Okay, so Rashi tells us over here, what you have to know is the Gemara in Kiddushin. I'm gonna check myself. The Gemara in Ksuvas on Daf Ayin Daled. The Gemara in Ksuvas on Ayin Daled talks about making conditions. The Gemara over there, it's the third parak. Hopefully, I'm right about this one. No. It's so funny. It's got to be also Gemara in Kiddushin. No, I know. Rashi's calling Ksuvas, right? I have it in my head that's in Kiddushin. Okay, whatever. I may be right. I may not be right. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the Gemara Ksuvas on Daf Ayin Daled says that in order for a condition to be a successful condition, so it has to follow the model of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Okay, so we just started Sefer Bamidbar. We didn't just start it. We're already up to Parsha Shlach. Okay, we're pretty far into it. Anyway, the end of the Sefer. So we're going to learn about the condition that was made between between Reuven and Gad, and also half of Sheva Menashe that kind of just came up, that jumped up at the end, and Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning, what happened was is that as they were on the other side of the Jordan River, on the east side of the Jordan River, so they had a couple of conquests over there at the east side. So the two Shvatim went over to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, "Look, it's really nice over here. We would like this area over here, the Aver HaYarden." And so Moshe says, okay, fine, but it will be only conditional. You're going to get Aver HaYarden, but only if you come in with us and help us conquer Eretz Yisrael. Well, then and only then are you going to get Aver HaYarden. So the Gemara goes over a number of details regarding the condition that was made, how the condition was made, and under what circumstances the condition is going to be binding. Okay, so Rashi over here highlights the following. In order for a condition to be binding, it has to be a kind of situation where I can appoint a shliach. Meaning, Moshe, in the case of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, so was he going to go into Eretz Yisrael himself? No, of course not. In other words, he was told he wasn't going to go into Eretz Yisrael. And yet he made a condition with the two Shvatim. So, who was going to ensure that the condition was going to be satisfied? It was going to be Yoshua. So in other words, Moshe instituted a shliach in order to make sure that the condition was going to be met. The only time that you can make a condition, that you can set a condition against a result, is only when I can appoint a shliach. But if you can't appoint a shliach, so then you can't attach a condition. Meaning you could certainly make the condition, but the condition is not going to be binding, and the result is going to be netted, even if the condition is not met. So Rashi points out over here, when it comes to the mitzvah of chalitza, so there simply is no, you can't make a shliach. A shliach is simply off the table. Since you can't make a shliach, so therefore there's no condition that's going to be binding. Even though, right, we said, when meaning we, the Beis Din, even though we said, hey, you can, once you do chalitza, she'll give you money. So it's true that we made a condition, but the condition is not attached. Meaning to say that once chalitza is done, that's it. Chalitza is done. And the reason explains Rashi why chalitza is going to be unattached to the condition is because this is the kind of thing that you can't appoint a shliach. A man cannot appoint a shliach in order to do chalitza. Okay. Good. That's Rashi over here. It's very fundamental towards the understanding of our Gemara. Now, a separate question, which actually, not only am I going to ask now, happens to be that the Gemara is going to answer. Does she owe him the money? Meaning, we certainly detach the condition from the action. Meaning, chalitza was done. Okay, but she did promise the money. Does she owe the money? So it happens to be, hold that thought, because the Gemara is going to answer that question in just a moment. Tanya Nami Achi, but before answering that question, here we are with a braisa. Chalitza mutas kshera. Ezuhi chalitza mutas. So here the braisa is going to spell it out. And that is called Shomrim Chalotza Amanashi Titin Lamach Masayim Zuz. Umaisa Beisha Achash Nafla Lifnei Yavim Shein Agon La Vamrle Chalotz La Amanashi Titin Lach Masayim Zuz Vamaisa Lifnei Rebbe Chia Vichshira. So, yeah, so exactly as Rav Yochanan explained. The Braisa says the same thing. Obviously, the Braisa comes before Rav Yochanan. This Braisa is totally supportive of Rav Yochanan's Pshat. And that is that a promise was made that if the Chalitza would be done, I owe you the money. And even though it sounds like the Chalitza is conditional, it's not a binding condition. Meaning once the Chalitza is done, that's it. The Chalitza is done. Again, in terms of whether or not she owes the money, is a separate question, which we're about to answer. Okay, how would the Asala come to Rabbi Chia Bar Abba? Okay, so basically, let's just outline quickly. The Brice at the top of the Amud tells us that a Chalitza Motas is Kshera. What is the definition? So Reish Lakish offers a fascinating interpretation of that, and which is that what you mislead him. You tell him you do Chalitza, and the two of you are going to get married. And once he does Chalitza, okay, good. Now and the Chalitza is done. Now she can go on with her life. Okay, that and Rav Yochanan cannot fathom that that's the pshat, and Rav Yochanan gives a different interpretation, notably that you attach a condition, and even though you're attaching a condition, so the chalitza is going to work even though the condition is not met, meaning the condition is not binding. Okay, so and the Braisa supports Rav Yochanan's pshat. How would also come to Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Amar Le Biti Amodi? Okay, so a following case occurred: Yavam Yavama come in front of Rabbi Chia. Okay, and now they're at the point of decision. Should we do Yibum? Should we do Chalitza? So he was totally interested in doing Yibum. Okay, so who steps in? Her mother. And Abiti Amodi Amrale Imam, Yeshiva Sazui Amidasa. So mom comes in and she says, sitting is better than standing. Okay, it's an expression that basically means, I don't think this is a good idea. Okay, she has her reasons. Okay, mom knows. So the anyway, she says this is not a good idea. So Amar Yadati La Yadati Le. So fine. So Rabbi Chia now does some follow up questioning. New, what do you know? In other words, he asked the mother, why do you think it's such a bad idea? So Amar Le in Mamona Hu Dechazel Levekava Lemechlemina. So the mother says, yeah, look, happens to be that my daughter was left with a lot of money, and her brother in law right now is looking at the money. Interested in the money, not so much interested in her, but certainly interested in the money. In other words, he only wants to do Yibam for the money. Remember, the Yavam is going to inherit all the assets. He's just doing it for the money. So, Amar La Lo Nichalach. So now, Rabbi Chia turns to the Yavama and says, what do you think? So, Amar Le Lo. So she says, I'm not interested. Okay, so. The mother right now is really opening up Rabbi Chia's eyes to what the Yavam is really interested in. The Yavama herself is not interested in the mitzvah of Yibam. She doesn't want to marry this man, her brother-in-law. So now, Amar Le Chalotzla Uvekachata Konsa. So Rabbi Chia now is going to try to coerce him or induce him to do Chalitza. So what does he do? So he goes over to the guy and says, look, I got this great idea. You'll do chalitza and the two of you will be married. Okay? Good. So, levasa de chalitza amrle. Now, in order for Rabbi Chia to do this, so what is he doing? He's passing like Reish Lakish? So, no. In other words, it sounds like he's passing like Reish Lakish, but as we'll see in just a moment, that's not what's happening. So, now that he induced him to do a chalitza, now, albeit the chalitza was without kavana, and Rav Yochanan's major objection to Reish Lakish is, that can't possibly work at all. Meaning that was a chalitza devoid of any kavana. You know that kavana is necessary for chalitza. So, levasa de chalitza amar le hashta minach ifsalala chalitza chalitza mal yasek yehechdi tishar la'ama. So now Rabbi Chia says as follows: look, you didn't do a good chalitza with her. Okay, I'm going to admit to that. However, you did a chalitza to her. Granted, it was basically, it was an inferior chalitza. It almost had no teeth, but I'll tell you what, it did have a little bit of a bite to it. The chalitza that she did with her, even though it was without kavana, but now what it does, what it did, it didn't allow her to marry whoever she wants, meaning she's not muteris, but it did disqualify you now to marry her. Okay, so where does Rabbi Chiya get this from? I'm not sure. Meaning, when Rabbi Yochanan rejected Reish Lakish, it sounded like a full rejection of Reish Lakish. And now, what we're getting from the Gemara over here is that, no, it's not, Rabbi Yochanan is not fully rejecting Reish Lakish. In that, even though a chalitza is done without kavana, it's not a zero, but it does create disqualification. It doesn't allow her to remarry, but it does disqualify him to her. And so Rabbi Chiya says, now that you did a chalitza, albeit a kavana-less chalitza, but still now you and her are disqualified, so you can't do yibam anymore. So you know what? At this point in time, just do a regular chalitza, let her get married, and let's move on from here. Okay. Yes. The condition, well, the condition doesn't work. In other words, it's not binding. The condition's not binding.
Right, I'm saying. So why would you think it would work?
Because generally speaking, when you attach a condition to something, meaning he's not doing anything. I understand that. No, but he needs to be a willing participant. In other words, from the Gemara over here, I'm asking the question, I'm not sure what the answer is, but can you tie him down and force him to do the chalitza? It sounds like the answer is no. It sounds like that's not an option. Okay. He needs to be a willing participant. One more story. Bas Chamua de Rapapa. So the daughter of Rapapa's mother-in-law. So Nafna Lifne Yavam. So she also now had a Yavam situation. Sheina Gonla. And it happens to have been that it was not appropriate. Again, we've gone over this numerous times in our Masechta. We're going to go over it in just a short amount of time from now. And that is that sometimes the Yavam Yavama are just not, it's not a shidduch. It's not a good match. And so what Beis Din's going to do is that Beis Din's going to advise. So over here, they are under advisement. This is not going to work out. So also coming to Abaye Amar Lechalotza V'Kachata Konsa. So Abaye says, okay, so we basically have to induce him to do chalitza. Okay, so he tries the Reish Lakish maneuver. You know, do chalitza and you're going to marry her. Okay, so Amar Le Rapapa Lo Savala Mar Lahad Amar of Yochanan. So Rapapa's right there, and Rapapa says to Abaye, no, don't do that. Don't use the Reish Lakish method. Meaning the Reish Lakish method is simply not, it doesn't take effect. Now, I know, moments earlier in the Gemara, we learned that it has a little bit of an effect, but Rapapa says to Reish Lakish, don't do that. In other words, you want to induce chalitza? Okay, I'll tell you how you do it. And that is, let's sweeten the deal. So, ve'ela hechi emalei. So, amalei chalotza amenashi titin lamach zayim zuz. Okay, so, basically, tell him that if you do chalitza, so she'll pay you 200 zuz. Okay, good. Meaning, the Rav Yochanan method. Labasa de chalotza amala zuhavlei. Ah, here we go. So now, chalitza was done. Now, what do we know? So we all know together that the chalitza is effective. Okay, that's what we know. Here's what we are going to learn together right now. And that is, she owes him the money. Meaning that it's not a binding condition, but money was promised. And since money was promised, so therefore money is owed. Now, not as a condition to the chalitza, but simply because you promised money for a service. Service was done, and therefore the money's owed. So, Amrle, Meshatini Bach Avdale, she says, yeah, but you know, I wasn't serious about that commitment. And if you're not serious about a commitment, so you don't owe the money. Now, what's the precedent for that? So here we go with the landmark case on this particular issue of when you are not serious about the money that you're promising. So, Milo Tanya Haresha Yaborech Mi Beis Asurim. So let's say you're running away from jail. A lot of jail talk today in today's daf. So Haresha Yaborech Mi Beis Asurim. You're running away from jail. V'haisama Avra Lefanov. And now there's a ferry to get you over the river. And V'amrele told Dinar V'avirune Ein Lo Elis Charo. And you say, look, get me over the river. I'm ready to give you a dinar. Okay, now we don't know how much things cost back in the day. So, but a dinar is a ridiculous amount of money to get you from one side of the ferry to the one side of the river to the other side of the river. He promises a dinar. Just get me over the river. Okay, so in other words, he was desperate. And so now, after promising that insane amount of money, now when they got to the other side of the river, he's like, okay, fine. How much does a ferry normally cost? So it costs $1. It costs $2. Here, I'm going to give you $2. Even though he promised an insane amount of money. So this idea of Mishati Anibach, I was just fooling around with you. That is a legal argument. That's a legitimate argument. Same thing over here. When she says, I'm going to give you 200 zuz for chalitza, that's an insane amount of money for chalitza, right? How much does chalitza normally cost? The answer is nothing. Meaning I'm using this term lightly, it's a mitzvah. Okay? Now that it certainly is, when recommended, the right thing to do. So in other words, it's a service that normally doesn't come along with a price tag. And even though she promised a lot of money, she can legitimately say Mishat Anibach. Okay. This is a really big topic with a lot of ramifications regarding when you promise an amount of money that goes well above and beyond what is the normal cost of that particular service, and whether or not you can come afterwards and say Mishat Anibach. Here in our Gemara, this is an example. This is but one example. Okay, now, if you remember, this is also, we're going to have two times today where the Gemara story is going to end in tragedy. So over here, if you remember, what happened? So there was it was a bias court, and they were recommending chalitza, and they had to induce him to do chalitza. So Abayich first started off with the Reish Lakish maneuver, and Rav Papa says to him, no, don't do the Reish Lakish maneuver, do the Rav Yochanan maneuver. Okay, fine. So he went to the Rav Yochanan maneuver. So basically, Rav Papa guided Abaye. Okay. Okay, that's right. Abaye was a little bit put off. Okay. By the fact that basically Rav Papa is just, you know, telling him what to do. Okay, now. Amrle avucha hecha, amrle b'masa. Im hecha, amrle b'masa. Yabu eine v'shchive. So now Abai turns to Rav Papa and says, where are your parents? He said, they're in the city. So Abai gave his parents the Ayin Hara. And both of Rav Papa's parents died. Now, the only thing I'll add to this, in other words, it's a really difficult Gemara to wrap our heads around. Rashi says over here that basically Rav Papa had clearly a better understanding. And Abai thought that Rav Papa basically was pampered. And so with the pampered upbringing that he had, so he was able to learn in yeshiva, unobstructed with the responsibilities of with the financial responsibilities of life, and so it aroused a certain amount of jealousy by Abaye. You'll remember that Abaye himself, Rashi doesn't make this point, but it's true. You'll remember that Abaye himself was an orphan, and so Abaye was very sensitive to this, and so that's what caused Abaye to give the Ayin Hara to Rav Papa's parents. Okay, right, wrong, right. I will not attempt to answer the question. It certainly seems like a lot, and that's an understatement. Okay. Anyway, Tana Rabbanan, let's go on in the Gemara. Okay. So for the first part of today's daf and Kudvava Medalev, so our first topic was Chalitza Mutas is in fact acceptable. It's Kshera. What the definition of that is Machlokas Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, and then the couple of anecdotes that the Gemara gave us. A couple actual case studies. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Chalitza mutas kshera, get mutas pasul. Chalitza mu'useis psula, get mu'useh kasher. Okay, so comparing and contrasting a get to chalitza, obviously they're very similar to one another, but over here the Braisa says that when it is a mistaken chalitza, it's good, it's acceptable. Good, that we knew already. But when it comes to a get that is a mistaken get, that is unacceptable. Meaning that when the get is issued, the get must be clear to the husband what exactly he's doing. When it comes to a chalitza that is forced, so that's unacceptable. When it comes to a get that's forced, that's kasher. Immediately the Gemara jumps on the braisa. What did we just learn together? Hey chidami. Idam arotzani afilo chalitza nami v'ilam arotzani get nami lo. So what do you mean a forced get versus a forced chalitza? If we're applying some pressure, and ultimately he says, in both cases, Chalitza and get. Yeah, I'd love to do it. Right? Now, could you please stop bending my thumb backwards? Okay? So if he says Rotsani, so then it works in both cases. And if he doesn't say Rotsani, then it works in neither case. So the Gemara says, okay, so hachi kamar. Chalitza muta solam kasher v'get muta lolam pasol. Okay, so we are going to redact the brisa. If the chalitza is a mistaken chalitza, it's going to be acceptable. Always. If it's a get, which is a mistaken get, it's going to be unacceptable. Always. Now, chalitza mu'usas v'get mu'usas zimnin kasher v'zimnin pasol. Now, if it's a forced get, forced chalitza, so times it's going to be acceptable, times it's going to be unacceptable. So, and when is that going to be? Had amarotzani, had alamarotzani. It depends. Meaning we're applying some pressure. So if he says, okay, fine, I'd love to do it. So after we apply some pressure, so that works. And if he said, and if he does not say rotzani, then it doesn't work. D'tanya, here we go with the brisa. How many times have we heard this brisa in Shas? The answer is Baruch Hashem, more than a handful. And that is Yakriv Oso Malam Shikov and Oso. Yachob Akarcho Tamar Lomer Lirtzonom. So when offering a carbon, so it has to be where Lirtzonom, it has to be with his will. But Yakriv means that we can force him. So we can force somebody and he'll give it willingly. What? How does that work? So the Gemara says, Akeitza Kof Noso Achi Yom Arotzani. V'chena Tam Mosa Begitin Hashem Kof Noso Achi Yom Arotzani. So that means to say that we can coerce the person until he says he wants to do it. Once he says he wants to do it, good. Now we have him doing it willingly. And the same thing is true regarding a get. Right? A man is instructed to give his wife a get, and he doesn't want to give it. And so therefore, we just apply a little bit of pressure, or if necessary, we'll apply a lot of pressure. And then he says he wants to do it. Good. So now that's considered giving a get willingly. Everybody knows, we've gone over this Rambam numerous times. The Rambam writes, I think it's the second parak of Gerushin, that what does that mean? If he doesn't want to do it, and he says, I want to only because we apply pressure, that's willingly? So the Rambam says, absolutely. The Rambam writes that we all want to do the right thing. Every one of us wants to do the right thing. It just happens to be that we all have a Yetzirah, so it prevents us from doing the right thing. So all we're doing is that we're just cutting to the core of the individual. If the right thing is to give his wife a get, so that's really what he wants to do. It just happens to be that the Yetzirah is getting in the way. Okay. Fine. Amarav, Amarav, Schor, Amarav, Huna. Yeah. Okay. We're on Kufav Amad Aleph, we're towards the bottom of the Amud, and so we just finished the topics of a mistaken get, mistaken chalitza, force get, force chalitza. One more topic to finish off the Amud Aleph. Amarava, Amarav Schara, Amarav Huna, Cholzin, Afa Pishain Makirin. Memanin, Afa Pishain Makirin. So chalitza is done even though you don't recognize. And Mian is done even though you don't recognize. Now, Mian happens to be tomorrow's daf, right? Tomorrow we're going to be starting in Mirzah Shem, the 13th parak of the Masechta, and we're going to be learning about Mian in detail. But right now, we've seen Mian already enough times in our Masechta, and we know Mian is an annulment of a marriage, and all the details of Mian, so stay tuned, come back tomorrow, where we're going to go through all the details. But meanwhile, however, when it comes to Beis Din, do they have to know the actual participants? Okay? So in the first version of the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rav Huna that even though Beis Din do not recognize them, so they can officiate. Cholzin alfa B'Shem Makirin, Maman alfa B'Shem Makirin. Leficha chen kosvin get chalitza elim kein makirin. Ve'en kosvin get mion elim kein makirin. Now, can you write up the paperwork afterwards? So in our first version, the answer is no. You can't write a paperwork, meaning the paperwork is being written up by Beis Din. And Beis Din can't write up the paperwork. Why? Because the writing up of the paperwork would seem to indicate that Beis Din knew the identity of these people. They don't. Simple question, by the way. If they don't know the identity of the people, so what are they doing officiating either Chalitz or Mian? And the answer is that the witnesses know the identity, and they're relying on the witnesses. But the Beis Din themselves don't know. So because they don't, if they wrote up the paperwork, so it sounds as if they're going to be not only officiating, but they're also going to be identifying these people. And they don't know these people. So, Dechayshin Beis Din Toen. V'ravididei Amarin Cholzin Elim Kein Makirin, V'in Maman Elim Kein Makirin. And Ravid disagrees. He says, no, Beis Din can only officiate when, and only when, they are, They know the identity of the people involved in the miyun and the chalitza. Leficha kosen get chalitza nafa pishem makirin. The kosen get miyun nafa pishem makirin. And therefore, they could write up the paperwork afterwards because they're only writing it up if they actually know the participants. V'lo chayshin lebeisin toin. And even though this paperwork is going to be handed over to another beisin, that's fine because the original beisin recognized these people when they came for chalitza and came for miyun. Okay, good. We are on the very top of Kufav Amud Beis, and let's go. Let's finish off our perek. The Mishnah over here, it's the most basic Mishnah regarding the procedure of Chalitza. Okay? This is, you've heard me say this before, this is classic Gemara, where the rudimentaries, the ABCs of how to do Chalitza. So you think it would come up earlier in the Masechta, didn't. You would even think it comes up earlier in this perek, meaning this is the perek dedicated to Chalitza. Albeit it's not a long perek, but still, you would think that, right, Kuf Aleph is where it started, and now Kuf Vav is where it finishes. You think this would be Mishnah number one in this perek. It's not. Okay, and that's just simply how information generally is presented us in the Gemara, meaning in order to learn, you have to know. Funny, it's like a little bit backwards, but that's just simply how it works. And now, the very basics, the how to procedurally, how does chalitza work? So mitzvahs chalitza bahu v'yivim to leveisdin. So they are going to come to beisdin v'heimasin lo eitzah ha'ogenaslo shenemer v'karulo zikneiro v'dibru alav. Okay, and now first counseling. Okay, in other words, again, this is a shidduch where it's coming min hashamayim. And so, but Beistin is deputized to make sure that this is going to be a good marriage. And so, so counseling, and if, let's say, there's a wide age discrepancy between them, I'm giving you a simple example, like even I could figure out, like if there's a wide age discrepancy between the brother-in-law, sister-in-law, so Beistin will then say, okay, this is not going to be a good shidduch. I mean, you're not compatible, okay? And then they're going to recommend chalitza. So Shinemar Vikarluza, I'm sorry, I read that already. Vihi Omeres. Now, procedurally, what's then done? So each one of them now has a speaking part. Okay? And I already pointed out, I get to point that out again. This is all clear from the four Psukim in the Torah. Meaning in the Torah itself. So the Torah outlines for us exactly how Chalitza is done. And so all we're doing together now in the Mishnah is we're basically concretizing what we saw in the Psukim. I'm almost there. Now I'm there. So in the Pesukim themselves, Vikaru lo, no, but one pasuk earlier, pasuk zayin. V'im lo yachpotza ish lakachas yivim tovalt yivim toshara lezikin v'amra. So first, it's her line. And that is, me'ein yivami lakim lachiv shem b'Yisrael. Lo ava yabmi. So my brother-in-law doesn't want me. Okay. The karu lo ziknei rov dibru elav. Now they're going to turn to him. Va'amad va'amar lo chafatzi lekachta. And he has a speaking part of lo chafatzi lekachta. Okay, good. So let's see the Mishnah. Okay, that was all psukim zayin and ches. In our Mishnah, so he omeres me'in yavami lakim lachiv shem b'Yisrael. Lo ava yavmi. Okay, so she says that line. And vehu omer lo chafatzi lekachta. And he says, I don't want to take her. So, uva lashon hakodesh hayu omrim. Now they would have to say in lashon hakodesh. Okay, the Mishnah in Sota has a listing of what has to be said in lashon hakodesh and what can be translated. Interestingly enough, this has to be said in lashon hakodesh. Okay. So, hayu omrim. V'niksha yivimto elav leinezikanim v'chaltzan na'alo me'araglo. Okay, let's call this step number three. Okay. Step number one, his speaking part. Step number one, her speaking part. Step number two, his speaking part. Step number three, the removal of the shoe. She removes the shoe off of his foot. So, v'irakabifanav. Step number four is that she will spit in his general direction. Okay. Literally in his face. But the spittle doesn't have to actually make it to his face. It has to be, you know, in his direction. Facing him. And finally, step number five. Rokanir ledayanim. The spit has to be seen by the dayanim. And finally, step number five. Anta v'amra kachis elisha shelo yivnez beis achiv. Okay. And this is what's going to happen to the man who doesn't want to build his the house of his brother. And ad kan hayu makrin, and that's it. Ukeshe hikur Rabbi Horkanus tachas ha Allah bekfar etam. Now, where Rav Horkanus had this episode, meaning he had a chalitza, and vegamers kol parsha, and he finished the entire parsha, meaning he went all the way to the end. Meaning not just Kachias Elisha Sherilo Yivnes Beis Achiv, which is the end of Pasuk Tes, but he went on. V'nikra Shema Biso Beis Chaluf Sanal. Now, if you're not Rav Horkanus, so what do you do with that last Pasuk, Pasuk Yud? Hold that thought. Hosek Elias Gomrim Kol HaParsha V'nikra Shema Biso Beis Chaluf Sanal. Mitzvah B'dayanim V'lo Mitzvah B'talmidim. So, who says that last line of Pasuk Yud? So, according to the Tanakhama, the Yanim say it, but not the Talmidim. Rav Yehuda Omer Mitzvah Kol HaOm Dim Sham Lomer Chaluf Sanal. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, everyone says it. Meaning anyone who's there is going to say Pasuk Yud. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Mitzvah Chalitza, Kora v'kore, v'choletzes v'rokaka v'kora. So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to break everything down into five steps. Okay. I just told you that the beginning of this week, Sunday, so I put together an IKEA piece. Okay, and pat myself on the back really proudly. Okay, it was 13 steps. Okay, so over here it's five steps, five easy steps for chalitza, and Rav Yehuda breaks it down to five steps. The Gemara says wonderful. Okay, so my kamash malan, Rav Yehuda, that's fantastic. First of all, we have psukim in the Torah. Secondly, we have a Mishnah. Okay, what's your contribution? Meaning, I love organizing information. Okay, I do. You probably noticed. So but meanwhile, Rav Yehuda. Good, so you organized the information. But what was your contribution? So it's funny because I think organizing information is a contribution. But, okay, meanwhile, so Masis and he. So HaKamash Malan Mitzvah HaChi V'Yapich Leislam Ba. So what Rav Yehuda is telling us is as follows. There are five steps, but they do not need to be done sequentially. As long as the five steps are done, sequence is not critical. Obviously, you should follow the sequence because that's the Mitzvah Satorah, but it's not going to be Ma'akev. And the Brisa tells us very clearly that sequence is not critical. So I know I read that quickly, but Abai says basically the following. Look. We're going to be makri, meaning we're going to teach each one exactly what to say, right? Basin is going to be there, and word for word, repeat after me, okay? And remember, it has to be done in Lashon Kodesh. They may not know it. I'm sure you've been to a chasna where you see the Masad de Kedushin tell the chasan, okay, repeat after me. Okay, good. So over here, same thing. Repeat after me. Now, what you have to make sure is that you don't put in commas where commas don't belong. So, for example, there are two examples that Abaye said. So, example number one is in Pasuk Zion. So, lo ava yavmi, okay? Which means that my brother-in-law doesn't want me. So, what you shouldn't do, says Abaye, is don't put a hard pause after the word lo. Because then the Pasuk could have been syntaxed as follows. Lo ava yavmi, right? My brother-in-law does want me. No, my brother-in-law does want me, right? Okay, good. So, it's a simple lesson in syntax and making sure that the commas are correctly placed or in this case, not placed. Okay. So, that's one example. And the other example is lo chafasi lekachta, which again, when read as a statement, as a phrase, right? Lo, I do not want to take her. It could be read lo, no, chafasi lekachta. I want to take her. Okay. So again, so syntax is really important and making sure that you don't pause where don't put in these pauses. So, Rava Amar Avsuke Milsa Huva Avsuke Milsa Leislam Ba. So Rava says, look, just a little pause is not, don't worry so much about it. Meaning, everyone understands the intent. So, Ravashi Eshkechel Rav Kahana Dikimitsara Makri Leilo Ava Yavmi. Ravashi finds Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana is really struggling to make sure that the Yavama says it correctly. Lo Ava Yavmi. So Amalei lo sever lamar lahada Rava. So he asked him. He says, "Look, Rava says, look, a little pause here and there, it's not the end of the world." So Amalei moda Rava belava yavmi, and his response is, "No, you're right. Rava in general is not so worried about pauses, but on this particular phrase, Like Reva was, it bothered Reva. If you put a pause between the lo and the avaya of me, and this one, Reva was insistent. You got to say it as one statement. Amar Rabbi Haman deKasav Gita deChalitza Lichtov Hachi. Okay, writing it up afterwards. Okay, this is now this is clerical discussion over here. In other words, there's a write up of the Chalitza. Now, let's make sure that we're all clear. Meaning, when it comes to a get, so the write up is the get. Meaning, the get is the written document. When it comes to the chalitza, everything is action based, right? It's a performance based mitzvah, where, right, speaking parts, removal of the everything we just went through. What you're doing, writing it up afterwards, is that's just simply, right? That's a it's just documentation that this happened, but it's not the document that creates the severance. Good. I'm saying it clearly. Now the Gemara wants to know, how do you write it up? What do you mean, how do you write it up? It's very simple. Just say what happened. Now, but the problem is, as we're going to see in just a moment, is that there are psukim. Okay, so now if you're writing it up, you're going to be writing psukim down. Generally speaking, you know, shouldn't be writing psukim. Ah, that's the issue. So Haiman, because of get the chalitza lichtov hachi. Akriina lidida min. No. So what you're doing is, when you're writing it up, so you don't write out the entire pasuk, you just simply say, she read the pasuk from here to here. He read the pasuk from here to here. And so you're writing a couple words, but you're not writing down the whole pasuk. Marzucha misarte v'kasev l'kula parsha. Now, Marzutra had a different technique when writing down the document. He would score. He would etch the lines in, and he would write out the whole pasuk. Okay. First of all, it's very clear from the Gemara that when you're writing pasukim down, so you have to score lines. Okay. We know that by tefillin, by mezuzah, by sefer Torah, right? The need to make sirtutim. So anyway, so over here, obviously, it's not stam. It's not a sefer Torah. It's just documentation. But because we're going to write psukim, so therefore he scores lines. So maskav lamar bar idi v'halo nitan likasev. So he says, wait one second. You're writing psukim down. You can't write psukim down, right? Rashi quotes the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin and daf samach in kosher megillah latinok liislamid ba. Meaning, in other words, either you're writing a sefer Torah or you're not writing the psukim. This idea that you can't write psukim, even if it's for educational purposes. And over here, it's not even educational purposes, it's just documentation. Don't write the psukim down. Right, what an awkward ending to the discussion. And oh, by the way, the halach is like marzutra, meaning that we'll score the lines and we'll write the whole pasuk down. Okay, so what do we do with the Gemara in Gittin? And you're not allowed to write psukim down for educational purposes, and meanwhile, over here, we're writing out the whole pasuk. Okay, it's a funny conclusion, and the Gemara itself does not resolve our Gemara over here versus the Gemara in Gittin. Okay, Amar Abaye, Rakuka v'kalta sora ruch la'asav lo klum. Okay, so let's say she spat, and it was a strong wind. They were outside, and the wind just catches the spit, and it never goes in his direction. Okay, so that's no good. So my tamei v'raka b'fanav b'inan. She has to spin his direction. So hilka chua ruch v'hi gutza. Okay. Okay, so let's say he's tall, she's short. Okay, so the moment she spits, it's going to be in his face. Okay, it's right, she's underneath him. So it's in other words, so that's considered rakaka bifanav. Now, let's say the opposite. Let's say she's really tall and he's really short. Okay, and she spits. So, if a wind catches it and it never gets into his height, in other words, it was literally over his head, so that's not considered bifanav, and it's not going to work. So, okay, fine. I'm right. Foul ball. Very good. Also, the spit has to be not manufactured. In other words, it has to be an organic phlegm that comes from her with no outside help. Okay. She can't. Oh my gosh. I'm going to say it. She can't juice. Okay. Fine. Okay. You got me in the baseball frame of mind. Okay. So my time of Iraqa me'atzma be'ina. So it has to be me'atzma. So, v'leika. Rava says that the Yanim have to see the spit. Now, that's a funny comment by Rava. Why? The Mishnah said it. So it's a little bit strange that the Mishnah says it. Rava says, you know, the Yanim have to see it. The Gemara doesn't comment, meaning for whatever reason, the Gemara is not bothered by the fact that Rava just seems to be repeating the Mishnah. Okay. V'nikra shema b'Yisrael beis chalitzanah mitzvah b'dayanim v'lo b'tamidim. Who says Pasuk Yud? Right? V'nikra shmo, and they call out b'Yisrael beis chalitzanah. So who's saying that? It's not clear. We saw machlokes atanayim in our Mishnah. Tanya. Gemara quotes a b'raisa. Am Rav Yehuda pamachas hayinu yoshim lefnei Rabbi Tarfon v'vasa yivam lechlotz. So there was an episode once where they went to Rabbi Tarfon for chalitza. V'amar lanu anu kuchem chalitzanah, chalitzanah, chalitzanah. And so what he instructed is everybody, whoever's here, whoever is participating, whoever's witnessing, probably the latter, not the former. In other words, whoever's witnessing the event. So say it three times, chalutzanal, chalutzanal, chalutzanal. Okay, why three times? Okay, the Gemara doesn't comment, but in other words, right, by Kiddush HaKodesh, we have a similar idea. Mekudesh, 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 anyway. But it is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, where he, and Rabbi Tarfon as well, that Pasuk Yud is said by everybody. It's not just limited to the participants, nor the Dayanim. It's said by all the spectators. Hadron Lach Mitzvah Chalitza. And that is the end of the 12th parak of the Masechta. So very good in terms of accomplishing, not just finishing the daf, but also finishing the parak. Okay, quick recap of today. Okay, number one, the conclusion of the story of Avdan, And Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, right, a really wild story regarding how they really got into an altercation, a verbal altercation in front of everybody, and the fallout from it. But basically, the reason why it was a dramatic story, but the reason why it came up is because the question of whether or not a katana can be involved can do chalitza. So Rabbi Yossi says yes. Rabbi Shmuel quotes his father. And as a result of that, Rebbe said, oh, Rabbi Yossi says a katana could do chalitza. Good. So katana could do chalitza. And then the Gemara awkwardly, after telling over the whole story, the Gemara awkwardly ends up by saying, oh, by the way, the halacha falls like Reb Meir. The katana cannot do chalitza. Okay. That was number one. Number two, chalitza was done in jail. It was just him and her there. Nobody else was there. So the Gemara says, what? And no Edim? So the Gemara says, no, there were Edim that were there. They saw from the outside. Okay. A big discussion occupying most of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, and that is a mistaken chalitza. Mistaken meaning that we're trying to induce the man to do chalitza, and so we're going to basically trick him into doing chalitza. So the Braisa says that a chalitza mutas is kshera. Okay, so what does it mean? How are we tricking him to do so? So Reish Lakish has a maneuver where you're basically telling him, do chalitza, and the two you're going to get married. Okay. Well, that's chicanery. Rav Yochanan says, that, of course, will not work. You need kavana. There's no kavana over there. He says, no, we're inducing him by basically sweetening the deal, by promising him that if you do the chalitza, you're going to get money. And meanwhile, there is no attachment of the condition to the action, meaning the action occurs and the condition is not part of the action, meaning in the chalitza will take place. Good. That is what chalitza mutas means. And under certain circumstances where the man is just simply being reluctant, resistant, so you could do that. Does she owe the money afterwards? So that was discussed in the middle of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, where it's from the Gemara itself, back and forth, in terms of whether or not the money is owed. It sounds like the Gemara favors the argument of Mishat Anibach, right? In other words, how can I be serious about that kind of money for something where that service doesn't command that kind of fee? Then on the bottom of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, we talked about a forced get and a forced chalitza. Forced get is never going to work. Forced chalitza also is not going to work. Sometimes it does work. Yeah, when you coerce, and with the coercion that he says, rotzani. Okay, under those circumstances, it would work, much like by karban, you force the person until he says rotzani. Here too as well, rotzani would work. Okay, then the Amud Beis of today's daf, Kavav Amud Beis. One other big topic that comes up on the bottom of the Amud. Do the Dayanim have to know the identity of the participants of the Chalitza? A point of discussion and litigation on the bottom of Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Okay, and finally, Kuf Vav Amud Beis, the process of Chalitza. There are five steps to Chalitza, right? She reads, he reads, then the actual she removes the shoe off of his foot, then she spits in his direction, then there's one more reading part, one more reading that's done by her. Okay, five steps to Chalitza. Then there is Pasuk Yod, which is unclear in terms of who says it, Machlokes HaTanaim. Okay, the big discussion that occurred on Kuf Vav Amud Beis is how do you write up the documentation afterwards? Because it's going to necessitate you to write Pesukim. You can't write Pesukim down if you're not writing a Sefer Torah, or a Tefillin, or a Mezuzah. So how are you writing the Pesukim down? So that's a wonderful question. And the Gemara has a back and forth on it. There are multiple opinions on this matter. Some would say basically you just simply highlight what was said, but you don't write the actual pasuk down. Meanwhile, Mar Zutra said, no, you score the document and you actually write the pasukim in. The Gemara says that's in fact the practice, is to actually write the pasukim in. Okay. Okay, I can stop over here.